Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Elkon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. Hi, I'm science-based advice columnist and author Amy Elkon, also known as the Advice Goddess.
And I'm animal behaviorist and author Dr. Jennifer Vertelin, or Jungle Jen, as Amy likes to call me.
This is our every other week show on which we lay out science news you can use to solve your relationship problems or just improve your relationships and have a better life. And not to worry, I will still be doing shows on the best behavioral science books in the weeks in between.
Think back to that day in middle school when your teacher had your class play the telephone game, also called the gossip game. I recently played this game with my Duke undergraduate students, only to find as we get older, we are no better at passing accurate information to one another than when we were 9. How is it that for all our complex language communication abilities, the message I whispered to the first student, Natalie made a sweet potato pie that made everyone happy, got passed from person to person and became, I don't know why, but everyone here is sappy, all in the space of 2 minutes. If I were communicating properly, like say a prairie dog, this would never happen. Prairie dogs do a lot of talking to each other about predators. And as you can imagine, that information has to be accurate. And it almost always is. If a prairie dog on one end of the neighborhood says, yo, Joe, the coyote is coming over the ridge on the left, there's a real problem if the prairie dog on the other end gets the message, no, Mo the coyote is on vacation in the south of France. As in, that little feller might get eaten, and so might some of his prairie dog companions. In contrast to prairie dogs, we humans are often pretty lax about our communication, especially when it comes to communicating in relationships or in the hopes of getting in one. So tonight, we are going to use science to tackle what goes wrong in our communication, how to avoid these missteps, and whether there's sometimes a place for deliberately miscommunicating. So Amy, I do think communication difficulties lie at the heart of most human relationship problems. What do you think is the biggest source of trouble when it comes to communication in a relationship?
Well, I would say the obvious big source of trouble is not communicating what you want or waiting to communicate and then boiling and boiling about something until you fly into rage and look for things to chase the person around the house with. So we don't communicate is this personal? Sorry.
Yes. Okay.
We don't communicate in a timely way for a couple reasons. And one is that we all know this. Many of us tend to be conflict avoidant. So we put off voicing the problem. And I laugh at this because it's like, what do we think is going to happen? Like a big rug's going to appear in a giant broom and we can just sweep that problem under. And now this is a big one for women. Now, many women seem to tell themselves that not only do men have the ability to mind read, but that they're doing it as a form of love. So you basically get the romantic World War II building up inside the woman to the point where Hitler is about to invade Poland. And meanwhile, the guy has not the slightest clue that there's the slightest thing wrong. Why? Because, yes, ladies, you actually have to tell a man what you want. Pouting is not a language. It's an imperceptible body movement that is sure to be missed by any guy who is not your flamingly gay best friend.
I totally agree with you. And in fact, animals really communicate things pretty instantly, especially if there's a problem. So waiting to communicate and hinting is a problem. But I actually think that the biggest problem is not listening. Animals listen so intently to one another that only when there's a lot of noise in their environment do things really mess up for them. You know, sometimes to the point of not even being able to identify who's the right species to mate with. You know, but left to their own devices without us noisy humans around, we could learn a thing or two from black-bellied wrens. This is a small little perching bird. And I use them as an example because they sing back and forth to display their relationship and defend their home. And wren couples really have to listen and pay attention because they're supposed to take turns singing without any gap. Right. And so, and they do almost with perfect synchrony, even when one of them kind of goes off on a little tangent and really gets into their part and goes on for a bit, kind of like I do when you get me talking about wrens.
Actually, I was too busy. I wasn't listening to that because I was too busy taking turns singing thing personally. Cause Greg always says, don't talk over the guests. Don't talk over Jennifer. Bad. Okay. But I really do agree with you about listening, that not listening is a huge problem in humans, but you know, it helps to help the other person hear you. You know, we sometimes, when we're talking, we don't do a good job of that. What helps you do that is you're presenting your problem in a way it can be heard. And mm-hmm. I've mentioned this a few times on the show, and I wrote it in my last book. Angrily attacking somebody or even just criticizing them, even mild criticism, it sets off their fight or flight system and their brain,
right.
Which, you know, we don't have these upgrades we needed since ancestral times. It's very bad at parsing the nuances of an attack. Is it a verbal attack or is it a hungry tiger attacking us? So both things set off pretty much the same, holy shit, we're about to get eaten. And you know, or, you know, punched in the nose and these biochemicals that course through our body telling us run and shutting down our stomach and our thinking. And so what happens when you're blaming somebody or criticizing them, you end up having a big old fight instead of a useful, productive conversation because you've kicked off their defenses. So, right. You know, I'm sure that I know animals fight, but I think that we're sort of more stupid about it, you know, in that, I mean, this is sort of basic science.
Well, yeah, actually animals do argue, but it's also got a very limited and very structured time, and they even probably take turns while they're arguing, which is something we don't tend to do.
We're, you know, for higher life forms, we're kind of stupid. So the way, if you're a human, to avoid having things get heated in a bad way, comes actually right out of the work of the guy I like to call the world's first behavioral economist, and that's Adam Smith. And he pointed out back in, I think it was 1617, well, don't quote me on the year, but it was somewhere, it was a long time ago, that sympathy is a powerful motivator to get us to want to ease another person's suffering. And then sympathy, empathy, people always, they're sort of a little bit convoluted, but basically getting somebody to feel compassion for what somebody else is going through. So instead of criticizing the other person, you instead present your problem in a way that'll cause them, well, to well up with sympathy or even guilt. Sympathy is the thing. Sorry, I got off on the wrong train. You want them to make you feel better. So to give an example from my column recently, there was a woman, her boyfriend would sometimes just not text her back. She'd text him and not like, OMG, I love you. And like, you know, it was just stuff about, hey, how was your night? You know, do you have a good gig? And he just would, there would be no response, not the next day or anything. And so that feels like being mini dumped. It feels bad. So I said, you know, instead of doing what she wanted to do, read him the riot act, I said, just go back and let him know that you feel really hurt when you get no response. And she did. And the guy ended up spending like half an hour on the phone telling her how much she means to him instead of telling her off.
Right. Well, and you know, that's really interesting because what you were saying about presenting the problem in a way that it can be heard and then having the other person have an opportunity to respond. And that's another important point when it comes to listening. The research shows for us humans and probably even wrens, if you're busy formulating your response while your partner is speaking, which can happen depending on how you're talking to them, you can't listen and think of what to say at the same time. Because when you're speaking in your head, you may as well be speaking out of your mouth, at least according to your brain. So you think you can multitask, but you can't. And people can feel when you're not listening to them, and so can wrens. If they're out of sync in their communication with their partner, they stop, they take a break, and they try again later. You know, on the other hand, we don't allow for that back and forth, and we keep going on and on back and forth over and over each other, continually getting louder. And it's like you said, it's not productive.
You know, this is so amazing what you said. I have to repeat it. I think you said, if you're speaking in your head, you know, like figuring out your next thing, you may as well be speaking out of your mouth. And this is so true. I'm reading a lot now in this area of research called embodied cognition. They always sound so important, but basically it's pretty simple. You know, it's how your mind and body, they aren't separate thinky and movement zones, unconnected. That was Descartes who said that, and a few other people, Plato and people before him. But your mind and body work cooperatively. And so real listening, that's something you do from your gut. And so you're not able to listen from your gut and then like be up in your head thinking like, oh, she's such an idiot. How can I, what can I say next? You know, beat her on this point. So, and as you said, in humans, it seems that there are bodily cues, ones that you might not even know you're giving off, that transmit what you really think about a person, like, you know, shut up already, a big bag of wind, you know, and you might be smiling and thinking you're faking politely listening, but, you know, that probably isn't going over as well as you think.
Absolutely. And, you know, and at the, and animals with each other are very attuned to that, you know, but sometimes people aren't listening. Not because they're not wanting to listen, but because it's not exactly the problem. They can't hear you. You mentioned this a few minutes ago, that you need to present the problem in a way that, that others can hear you. And, you know, for example, women complain a lot that men don't listen to them. But in some cases, it may be that men really can't hear them all that well. I mean, you know those whistles that dogs can hear, but we can't?
I do.
Yeah. So sometimes some female voices are to men what those whistles are to people. Okay. The brain of the human male is essentially wired to pay attention to lower vibrations or frequency. Like if I lowered my voice right now, probably the men perked up.
You should do that. Actually, I want to have a fake voice. I want to start smoking just so I can sound sexier on the radio.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, so female voices, when they get excited, they tend to go up in higher frequency and intensity, especially when they're upset or excited. And these sounds don't really resonate the same for men in their brain as they do for other women. And as if that weren't bad enough, you know, human males are a little like male green tree frogs.
Like little male green tree frogs. Yes, this is exactly how I always think of Greg.
Well, actually, there's a point to this, okay? So male green tree frogs become desensitized to or habituated to repeated intense sounds. And they, you know, and they pay attention to lower vibrations. And there's some research to suggest that men may have also a tendency to habituate to repeated sounds, like their girlfriend, that are higher than normal in intensity also.
And, can I just ask you about when you said repeated intense sounds, do you mean like, you know, more shrill, like female voices? Okay, I didn't know what you meant by intense.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so in when women's voices tend to get really intense when they're upset, they actually go up in frequency and they sound kind of shrilly. And so
I hate you.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, another thing about how men process voices differently is that when a man hears a voice, he has a tendency to compare it to his own voice, trying to get a picture of the speaker. And that's probably to try to figure out if the voice is that of another male, just like a green tree frog. And, you know,
I just have one other question. When you say when he hears a voice, are you talking about, you know, it's dark and he can't see the voice? Does that work the same if you can see the person?
I'm talking about the way the brain processes a voice in a male brain versus a female brain. So,
if he can see the person who's talking, I can't understand if you're talking about in the dark or if, when you say get a picture of the speaker, I mean, can he see the, is that what you're, I'm confused.
No. Sorry. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't mean in the dark. I mean, he can be looking right at you, but his brain is saying, how male is this voice?
Oh, okay. I get it.
Right. What frequency do I really need to pay attention to this? Is it another male that I have to worry about? Or is it just a shrilly female? Okay. and you know, sometimes I mean, that's not to excuse males for not listening to their partner. Right. I've always wanted to try, though, playing the sound of a mighty big green male tree frog to see if that will get a man's attention in a conversation if he seems to not be listening. So, you know, maybe one of our listeners can give it a try and get it back to us.
I think that would actually, yes, get his attention, but the same as like the iPhone sound of like a school bus horn or, you know, because it's unexpected. Go. So sorry about that. Right. But anyway, I keep apologizing. That's bad. That's something, you know, women tend to apologize. Okay, I'm going to stop that right now. Stop that self. Actually, that's something I learned. I learned this. I was just at SPSP, which is the Society for Personality, and I'm not going to remember the rest of this, a big psych conference. And somebody in the F-Psych pre-conference said, if you want to have better self-regulation, and that means like to get yourself to do stuff you should, basically not procrastinate, instead of saying, I should do that, you do this the asshole way. You say, refer to yourself in third person, Amy should be doing that right now. And they use LeBron. And I actually knew who that was, LeBron James. That's a miracle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so LeBron should do that right now. And so that's just a little tip on communicating. But I'll get back to, we were talking about the show, and you reminded me of something that we're sometimes guilty of giving incomplete information. That's how you referred to it. And humans, you know, not telling the whole story, it's not always a bad thing. And the best example of that is if you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. So in my book, Good Manners book, Good Manners for Nice People Sometimes Say Fuck, I write that honesty is the best policy, except when lying your ass off is a better policy. Now, let me clarify. I don't mean lying about meaningful things, important, need to know things. I'm talking about considering whether a person needs to know, you know, exactly all. Like maybe you could motivate your sweet, wonderful girlfriend to never wear that dress again without telling her that it makes her ass look about the size of Kansas. And really, all you have to do that is to tell her you don't love the style, you don't love the color, anything other than her ass size in it. And also, right. I do have to say, because I like to give the real life answers, be prepared for her to ask, come on, it's really my ass, isn't it? And then also be prepared to have your ass lie itself off. So anyway, for the critter world, I guess the ass in a dress thing isn't a problem for the animals, but is there deception in the animal kingdom?
Well, you know, although I don't think there are any albatross females out there asking if their butt looks fluffy in their feathers, I do have to say that animals lie all the time and for various reasons. They especially lie, you know, to a different species. Like, for example, the stingless bee in Brazil shouts. I don't know how many people knew that bees can shout. You know, when it finds food, it shouts because that implies that it's got a lot of its compadres around, and the competitors who try to steal their food by eavesdropping think twice about trying to come and steal if they think there are a lot of the stingless bees around. So that's an example of lying. But, you know, one of the common threads to lying in animals is that it usually makes sense and it involves some sort of self-preservation. It just turns out that in albatrosses, they don't need to self-preserve by lying about their fluffy feathers.
So what do they lie about? Do they lie?
Albatrosses, big liars? Well, we don't know if they lie. We do know they do give complete and accurate information about how they're doing. Like when one albatross of the pair comes back after foraging for food at sea, it will let its partner know, you know, hey, I didn't find as much food, so off you go, but come back a little bit sooner. Now, maybe there's an albatross that's just kind of lazy and it wants its other partner to do everything. So in that case, it might be deceptive about its state. And how hungry or how satisfied it is, but usually that wouldn't do them very much good. So they don't lie about things that actually hurt the partnership. Like you said, right? You know, not to lie about things that are important and that you need to know. Now, sometimes they might lie about their location if they're cheating, you know.
That's what I was going to ask. Is that lipstick on your beak? You know, I mean, it seems to be sometimes prudent, you know?
Yeah. And they have found examples, especially in birds, where they give deceptive communication about their location, or they were off having a rendezvous and they come back as if they were doing nothing wrong.
Sluts.
Yes, I know. I was just going to say, you know, in general, you know, I think that when it's important, animals, give complete and full information. And I think that we really can pay attention to that because, like you said, we expect people to, especially our boyfriends or our partners, to read our mind. And it's all for, you know, I'm all for having superheroes, but that's usually not something they're capable of doing. And if we think about honeybees for a minute, just to go back to, you know, some more cool stuff about bees, their whole world revolves around talking about food. And they
sounds
do
like
this
my family.
With some, yeah, right? It's a couple I know too. Their whole like relationship revolves around the next meal. But they do this. The bees do this with something called a waggle dance.
Oh wait, we're talking about honesty through ass wagging.
That's right. Honeybees got swagger. So there are two parts to the dance, right? The waggle and then the return. So the waggle is like a figure eight, and then the they turn to the right, followed by another figure eight, and a turn to the left. It's sort of like country dancing, I guess, for honeybees. And if the bee moves vertically, so up, then the message is that the source of food is directly towards the sun. And how long the waggle part lasts is equivalent to the distance. And so, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of people can't even give directions that clearly, much, you know, to the gas station, much less to a flower in a field. And
next
the
time,
honeybees,
I'm going to let my ass give the next person directions who asks.
Let your ass do the talking instead of your fingers do the walking. So honeybees are extremely precise in giving directions to their fellow bees. They don't just come back and give a half-assed waggle, you know, unless, of course, they're tired.
Oh, okay. Now this, what you're saying, tired, you know, and is exactly what I was talking about before, and about how you have to be, you know, it's the worst time to get into some kind of discussion, because here you are, you're sort of prey at this point. So, you know, you really need to postpone discussions. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but, you know, unless you're, there's something dangerous about to happen. So your girlfriend's about to drive over a cliff. Doesn't matter how tired you are, be honest with her and fast, you know, and then again, not so much if she's already at a party in that ugly ass dress. Then I actually suggest you tell her, you go the opposite way of your thoughts. You tell her she looks beautiful several times, and then kiss and caress her while you're doing it.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think, you know, it's a little late. You're exactly right. If you're already at the party, but I want to get back to bees for a moment. There's so much about bees that's so cool. There's a surprising amount, really, we can learn from them. But when researchers kept a bunch of bees up all night by randomly rattling them awake, so basically making them really stressed and tired, you know, which is pretty, I know, right? That's so mean. I mean, I don't know if bees that stay up all night are actually cranky like us the next day, but they sure do mess up their waggle dance, and they are way off. They are so off in their directions. It's not funny, except it is funny. You know, and they just basically don't communicate as well when they are tired or stressed. And honestly, the same is true for us. When we are sleep deprived or stressed, a lot of things suffer, including how well we communicate our ideas and our ability to understand and listen to what someone else is even talking about.
Right. You're absolutely right. And what we don't really have in our little talking toolbox is this thing we should, which is the idea that you can say, let's talk about this later. You know, I'm really tired. I'm not at my best. And actually, see, this is something I do with my, I have ADHD and I take drugs for that and everything, but I will check out in conversation. And now what I could do is just pretend I hadn't checked out, but this is bad in case you're tested on it later. And also it just seems kind of rude. And frankly, my boyfriend's entertaining. I want to hear what he says. So I'll just say to him, oh, honey, could you repeat that? I checked out for a moment. You know, and right. If you have a disease, you know, a disorder, and I don't really consider it that ADHD, it's just a different brain, but, you know, you sort of can get away with it better. But people really should, you know, think about, you know, postponing a discussion, saying, you know, I want to think about this. You know, and this allows you, like you're saying, when you can't really hear somebody else. And so when you can, you're a little more able to consider the other person's point when you're not tired, and to do the important thing in a relationship, which is to solve problems as if they're your problems together, instead of like it's you against them and you're Mel Gibson with the blue face paint and it's do or die. And actually, you'll be so sick if I try to talk in a Scottish accent or do that bits from the movie. So I'll just borrow from another Mel Gibson thing and just say, okay, your turn, sugar tits.
Well, you know, I do love it when you talk to me that way, Amy.
I always call her sugar tits when we're not on.
But, you know, I think definitely bad idea to continue talking when you've reached a point where you're not able to, for whatever reason. But, you know, I think we also need to talk about how we communicate when we meet people and how to best communicate at that stage. Right. And there waiting to communicate can actually be the reverse. It can be a problem instead of a benefit.
Right. This is a big pet peeve of mine because I have all these sad guys writing to me. So a bad example of waiting to communicate is what too many men do with women. They figure out they like a woman and they practically have a whole relationship with her, but in their head without ever asking her out. So the relationship is basically just their thoughts about maybe someday asking her out, how they'd like to ask her out, and then wanking off and thinking about having sex with her if they ever did ask her out. I mean, it's just totally pathetic and crazy.
Well, it is. I mean, that would be like a bull elk scoping out the females and then running off scared into the forest to dream about them.
That's really pathetic.
That would never happen. That would actually, we would have no elk.
Oh my God. No more elk. That's sad. So guys, don't be the sad, you know, the sad elk. Be a man. Be the big elk. Okay. I'm not able to talk about animals like you are. So I think I'll go back to people. So the thing I say, and I say this a lot because guys need to hear it a lot, that being afraid to ask a woman out is not good reason to not do it. So rejection, what? It's like, what, 13 seconds? So a woman's not going to videotape it and post it to YouTube. Even if she were that kind of person, she wouldn't have time to get out of her phone and start shooting you and everything. And so if you put rejection in perspective, if you can just simply see it as a sign to move on to the next woman, who knows why she doesn't like you? She's mean. She has a girlfriend. You know, she doesn't like blondes and you, whatever, that kind of thing. If you just say, okay, no, it's sign to move on to the next, then you can ask women out to the point where you really increase your chances of having love, sex, or relationship and actually having choices, because it's a numbers game. If you ask out one woman like in a whole year, okay, and she says no, you're kind of screwed. But I do want to say, you know, when you're asking women out, because this is part of it, an important part of communicating is realizing that you don't just do it with your voice. So don't stand there with your shoulders all rounded like a loser. You know, stand like a man, you know, dress like a man, you know, stand up, you know, don't be a worm. And so, okay, what if you feel like a worm? That's a problem. Believe me, I was a worm for many years and I had to transform myself in my early 20s. So I have been there. And the truth is we all secretly feel like worms, except for maybe psychopaths. You know, we feel like that at times. So if you feel like a worm and you want to ask a woman out, what you need to do is to act like somebody else. Mm-hmm. Act like somebody who isn't a worm. Totally assume their manner and body mannerism. So like just steal their personality. So I have a friend, he's been on the show, cognitive scientist named Scott Barry Kaufman. And he did this personal investigation because he was having kind of trouble getting girls. And he gave George Clooney as an example via some research he did. He calls George Clooney prestigious man. And he points out that the way to be is like Clooney, to be confident as opposed to dominant and scary. So confident is good. Confident is like, yeah, we should leave now. Scary is throwing the girl in your trunk. So it's just, you know, having, I didn't do that very well, but you know, confident, you'd say that more confidently. We must leave now. So Clooney, just to sort of put a cap on that, he's charmingly confident. So be Clooney, at least until you see, you know, how it works and that it works. And then you can merge Clooney into you and then finally just be you.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I agree. Confidence is key. And even for animals, you know, I like to think of the sultry, sexy flame bower bird as the George Clooney of the animal kingdom. I mean, this guy really knows how to put the moves on a female and he does it with confidence. He puts himself out there and he charms the lady off her feet with a flamenco style dance. Right.
Wow.
So, yeah. And he faces and braves rejection all the time.
Wow, this is very Miami. The Miami, are they Miami birds? That's very, you know, like at the pool at the Standard.
No, they don't live in Miami.
Damn.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
doesn't work with my theme.
Right?
Yeah, I had a visual theme going. It has nothing to do with the real life of animals. So I want to get to where women go wrong in this whole meet and attract stage. And this is also something I've discussed a lot in my column. So women need to not spill the entire vat of their feelings all over men. So what feminists especially deny is that women have the power. Women are the gatekeepers. They say yes or no to men. And they also, not only that, they're the ones who can signal to men like, hey, come hither. They signal to men that they want to be asked out. And that's what women should be doing. So in other words, women really do get to choose by flirting. That's how they indicate their choice, not by asking men out. That is a huge mistake. And here's why. Women evolved to be the choosier sex. That's because we're the ones who get pregnant and we needed to make sure the guy was going to stick around, not just be off behind some other bush with some other cave lady. So men co-evolved to expect that, probably some, well, anyway. So women who are women who are too forward, asking men out instead of flirting, waiting to see whether something comes back because it's a dance, not a monologue. Those forward women get devalued by men. There's some research by Ann Campbell on this that I just read, you know, that, oh, I can't remember what she said. It was just sort of like this horrible, dry statement about, you know, basically they just flick them to the curb. So women like to say they're just being equal or something like that when they go after men, like men pursue women with this direct approach instead of the flirty approach. But what they're really doing, they're just being impulsive and they're justifying it with feminism.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, female animals always give the signal that they're interested. And as long as women aren't flirting like a giraffe, you know, figuratively speaking, because the way that giraffes flirt is by nudging the ass of their love interest with their nose, you know, which, talk about obvious, right? And forward, that would be something. Yeah.
Well, we're on sniffing. I wanted to ask you about dogs and communication. So I have this 5-pound Chinese crested, and actually she's a hairy hairless, which means she has these little furry after ski boots on her legs and a plumy tail and sort of a Veronica Lake Lady and the Tramp thing going on. And then other than that, she's hairless. So to get to the point, she's very spirited and mischievous. And, you know, I'm sort of this loving and stern disciplinarian, but while she listens to me, I put her in doggy jail if she doesn't for, you know, a little bit.
Right.
My boyfriend, who is a big guy from Detroit, he is just powerless before my dog. She sees him as a human dog toy. And, you know, he's been trying to talk to her like he means it, but she just sort of looks at him and then ignores him. So tell me about that. What's going on here?
Well, you know, that might be because Aida just thinks he's full of shit. And even though he's sounding all manly. Okay. I mean, there was actually a recent study showing that dogs stop listening and paying attention to people who are unreliable or whose signals, like they don't follow through with their signals. And so they're not trustworthy. So that means they're all talk and they don't, they're just full of hot air, so to speak. I got a friend like that. He's full of hot air. And,
oh my God.
You know, I think, yeah, I mean, I think we could learn how to do that a little better ourselves, taking a cue from dogs.
I love that. That's really pretty hilarious. Well, this is almost the end of our show. This is Amy Alcon. You've been listening to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Alcon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. Join the two of us again in 2 weeks and join Amy Alcon next week for her regular show featuring the top behavioral scientists explaining how their work can improve your life.
And please support our work by buying our new books, Amy Alcon's Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck, and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin's Wild Connection, What Animal Courtship and Mating Tell Us About Human Relationships. So, Dr. Jen, any final words from the animal kingdom?
Yeah, listen, if you're having communication troubles in your relationship, try listening like a black-bellied wren, waggling like a honeybee, and if all else fails, croaking like a green tree frog.
I love that.